Show.
That's my open?
That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford.
That's my open. I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion.
Bradfo Show. That's delicious.
All right, Boom Sauce, live from the brand new tap room at Lord Hobo Brewing Company. This is my first podcast at the Lord Hobo Brewing Company.
This is a cool place. This is beautiful.
See, it's not every podcast you get to do where you get a tour of a brewery before you do it. Rich Hill, so awesome to see Rich. And Rich, you were just working out. You literally so I'm driving down to meet you at Mike Boyle's place. Yeah. You work out, you still live in Massachusetts.
Right.
And I didn't realize it was 300 yards from the Lord Hobo Brewing Company. So.
Yeah, no, I know. I had no idea either, but I've seen.
Now you know.
Yeah, now we know. Yeah. And I've been going to Mike's place for almost 11 years now. So really been fortunate to be able to have that facility and somebody like Mike and his staff that's around to really keep me together in the off seasons.
It's working.
Yeah.
I mean, so here's the number I'm going to drop on you. And obviously, first of all, congratulations on an unbelievable season. There's a few numbers I'm going to drop on you because I did show prep. But it's, first of all, in the years that you have left the Red Sox, with the Oakland, with the Dodgers, you have an ERA. Your number, I think your team record is 40 something and 20 something. Your ERA is just over 3. I mean, this is whatever contracts you sign. And by the way, to the day, almost 3 years ago, you signed your Oakland deal.
Correct.
1 year, million,
right.
which was, a great story in itself. And then it took another level.
Right.
But you've lived up to these deals. I mean, you've lived up to these deals and more, and you're keep trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, continue to keep fighting and not really giving up. That's the biggest thing, and not being satisfied. So,
did you ever give up? You probably were asked this before, but did you ever almost give up?
Yeah, I've been asked that numerous times because, when you're 35 and, out of a job, and especially in professional sports, the thought is, okay, well, your time's up, you've had a good run, time to do something else. But I never thought that. I always felt healthy, and going home that off season, or going home during that season, actually, in the 2015 year, I felt good. I felt strong. My shoulder felt healthy. And, I was just continued to keep throwing, and things ended up obviously working out the way that they did, but it was the work and the time that was put in to get to that point and get to the point where to put myself in a position to be successful in the coming years.
That must seem like forever ago.
After two World Series and an NLCS with the Dodgers, it's been maybe not a forever ago, because it was just such great memories. And I think obviously Boston has a special place, not only because we grew up here, my wife and I, but also because they gave us multiple opportunities, and I think that's something they'll forever be grateful for. And I think that's something that they recognized the work ethic, they saw that there was something there, and they gave me the opportunity.
So I was going to throw some numbers out at you. Here's one for you. So you have another year before free agency. I think you'll be 40 your next free agent class, but here's the big but. You have thrown basically the same number of pitches as the top, two of the top three guys.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Corbin, who's going to be 29.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas, with Nate Eovaldi, same thing, right around between 14,000 and 15,000 pitches. And Keuchel, Dallas Keuchel, the other guy, you've thrown probably 4,000 or 5,000 fewer pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something when you're looking at how you are doing, the way that you are trending, and forget about age, this is what people should be looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things, obviously, is being able to have the trainers and the and the staff that have been fortunate to have to obviously stay healthy. I think that's the biggest key, is being able to do that, but also understanding that as you get older in your maturation process of learning to become a complete pitcher, you become more efficient. And understanding that over the last couple of years since 2015, and being able to use my curveball more efficiently and understand how to use that curveball. And, really at that time in 2015, it was brought to my attention that, using your best pitch more, you're going to become, more.
And then you get the reaction from the hitters. I mean, this is...
Right. Like, so you become more effective. You end up seeing that it works. And it's something where, you're throwing more than, 50% curveballs or maybe 50% curveballs at the time. When, if I was doing that when I first came up, I think it would be a theory that people wouldn't really agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in that respect is where some of my mindset has changed according to... analytics, and if you want to, where it's actually helped, and I've benefited from it, and I think it's, I'm not saying that I did this or anything like that or changed the game by the way of the style of pitching, but it's definitely has changed where you're seeing guys use more of their best pitch more often
instead of four or five pitches, like when Dice K came in, he has 18 pitches,
sure.
And it's like, well, that can be a good thing or a bad thing if you can't throw it over the plate, if you aren't getting the good reaction.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because, listen, World Series is about emotion. Mm-hmm. It's about, and part of when the Red Sox montage is made, right, it's Chris Sale in the dugout, two pitches. He has two pitches, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
but he's an emotional guy and he's trying to fire up his team. But that to me, I was like, well, you could have pointed out a bunch of other stuff. I don't think you should be focused on he has two pitches.
Yeah, I think, and again, if you look at, and I don't really enjoy talking about myself,
yeah,
but if it's...
No,
if it's,
but we're talking about
right,
pitching.
Yeah, and if it is a guy like myself who has two pitches, let's say, it's how you use those two pitches. So two pitches becomes, how can you spin a breaking ball? How can you change the shape of the breaking ball? I think that's something that definitely is... for everybody to understand that it's more than two pitches. So when you can change the shape of your breaking ball and you can change the speed of your breaking ball and you can change the, the spin rate on your breaking ball and change the spin rate on your fastball, it creates multiple opportunities for pitches. And that's where you understand how you can become a complete pitcher as opposed to, okay, I just throw hard and I have a really nasty breaking ball.
Mm.
Or I have a great changeup and that's it. I just throw those three pitches the same way all the time, every single time. Now, there is a benefit to that because if you're throwing it out of the same window, or the same arm slot and the same release point every single time, it's obviously very difficult to pick up on those pitches. Mm. But it also makes it, depending upon the speed, more difficult or much more easier to hit. So if you're throwing harder, the theory is that it should be harder to hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now you're starting to see guys that aren't throwing as hard, but they're more difficult to hit. And why is that? And that's because of the spin rate and because of, the deceptiveness that the pitchers have. So that's something that I benefit from for sure.
Do you, not to say, we're not saying you're a pioneer, but there has been a noticeable change in the way, exactly what you're talking about, and how guys are accepting of the pitching, the big curveball, mm-hmm, the different, using just two pitches in different ways. I feel like it has changed, and the jumping off point might have been when you started having success at the point of your career that you did. I don't know if you kind of felt that way or if guys have come to you, picked your brain, or if you've noticed that as well.
Yeah, I have. I've noticed, a lot of guys have come up to me and, either said, and it's, really humbling in a sense because, they've said, you've given me inspiration to come back or to continue to keep pitching because of what you've been able to do at your age. And I think that's something that, speaks to just the work ethic, the continuation of not giving up. And you're always going to face challenges and things are going to come in the way, but it's the obstacles that you have to be able to navigate through in order to reach your goal. Everybody has goals, we all have goals, and we see the goal but we don't see the obstacles, mm-hmm, so to speak. So it's you want to see a finished product and that's your goal, but how many people are going to go through the obstacles to get there? The failures, the injuries, the people telling you that you can't do it, or whatever the negative response is going to be to where you want to get to, you have to be able to be persistent enough and have a passion for what you're doing to get to that goal. And not being really, caring of anybody else's opinion if it's going to be interfering with where you want to go.
Your postseason numbers are really good across the board. But you go into that game four. Tell me how you felt going into game four. Tell me how you in hindsight now, when you look at, okay, I'm facing this Red Sox lineup, did you have an idea what the lineup was going to be?
Yeah.
Did you have an idea of like how you were going to approach him? Did you feel, obviously you probably felt good, but did you feel confident heading into that game?
I felt very confident. Yeah, I always feel very confident going into any game that I'm going to pitch. That's not just... It's just because I'm prepared. I think that's the biggest thing. Sometimes I think when guys aren't as confident, you have different things that could lead into that. Maybe not being as prepared, injury, dealing with some kind of fatigue or some kind of injury that's happening where, you're not at 100%. And not to say that you have to be at 100% to go out there and perform. I don't think anybody actually is. I don't know if I've ever actually been at 100% when I go out there and perform. But being prepared is the biggest part of knowing
Did you know the lineup that they were going to put out there?
At the time, look, I'm not going to say this does not mean, I'm not saying this is in any manner at all. My game plan is not going to change.
Okay.
So understanding who's going to be in there and who is not going to be in there doesn't really.
So it's more about like you felt good.
Yeah.
You were pitching, you were healthy, your stuff was good at the time. And, it didn't matter if it was the Brewers, if it was the Red Sox, if it was the Yankees, whatever.
Right.
You were going to do it your way.
Absolutely. And I haven't changed, since 2015 when I came back and as a starter. Mm-hmm. I've continued to keep the same kind of game plan, the same strategy. And I go with the flow of the game. I don't try to let the scouting report dictate exactly what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's things that you have to do that the game is telling you as a pitcher, and it's calling for certain pitches as opposed to what a scouting report actually says. And, that's another side of becoming more of a complete pitcher, is being able to, some days you don't have your best stuff, obviously, and some days, more often than not, you don't have your best stuff, but there are days when you have to figure out, maybe I use more curveballs, maybe I use more fastballs. It depends on, on the certain day. The scouting report definitely gives you a tool to help you navigate in the right direction and maybe give you some insight to certain times that you might be in a jam out there mm-hmm. on the baseball field. But more often than not, I believe that you should go with your best stuff and go with your gut that you feel is the right pitch at that time.
Was there a hitter's, do you remember against the Red Sox in that game, a hitter's reaction? Because hitter's reaction is so important. Like we look at it, especially when, from the outsider's view, when you're pitching, there's 91, there's 92, but oh my goodness, he was an hour late on the fastball.
Right. Was there an
at bat that you remember? And because there are some key at bats. Every at bat is a key at bat on that stage. But do you remember any particularly?
I think the biggest for me was obviously keeping Mookie off of the base paths early on. And JD, with his...
Which is an interesting guy to face, I would imagine, because he's obviously obsessed with this sort of stuff. How are they pitching me?
I can accelerate and decelerate a fastball. Okay, so that's something that takes a lot of time and a lot of practice. And that's another thing, it's just practice, right? So you're constantly throwing, you're constantly thinking about how to manipulate the baseball and how to have that work in your best interest mm-hmm. and your advantages. But to be able to accelerate and decelerate a fastball is huge, and be able to slow down or speed up your delivery, it's all about disrupting the timing of the hitter. So as a pitcher, if I can do that by half a second, just by a slightest of a margin, mm-hmm. I win. Mm. And I think that's something that I've been able to adjust to and understand as a pitcher as I've gotten older. If I had known that when I was younger, I think
well, it's just like that's how hard everything you throw, right?
Yeah.
But so yeah. With JD, that was the you know, whatever, it's come and gone, but that would be sort of the game plan. I want to alter my fastball. I want to alter my delivery.
Yeah, and you can elevate. You can, you know, with him, and I think obviously you can use your breaking ball in multiple different manners. You just got to make it, you know, the ability to spin it and hit the back foot, the ability to spin it and hit the front of the plate, the ability to spin it and hit the top of the zone. Mm-hmm. That's something nobody ever talks about. It. There's a top of the zone. Everybody's like, always pitch at the knees, pitch at the knees, pitch at the knees. But there's also a top part of the zone that is a strike. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ability to use that is my strength. Mm-hmm. That's my strength is, you know, the belt up. I'll throw a ball right down the middle of the plate and challenge a guy to hit it, and that's what I love to do, because I think that's, you know, here it is, hit it, see what you can do with it.
Right.
And it also speaks to efficiency, because it's something that you know, the more efficient you can be with the pitches, the longer you can stay in the game. And you know, the funny thing is about that game four is that I wasn't even going to start that game. Mm-hmm. They were going to start a reliever.
Oh,
so
really?
I think that was where a lot of the confusion came in for, you know, okay, well, we don't know who's starting for the Dodgers, and we can't set our lineup.
Why was that? I don't know.
No,
but there was, so Buehler starts game three, and I'm just trying to remember. So what would you have come in in relief? Or?
Yes. Yeah, I would have came in.
So it was doing the thing that everyone's doing now, which is, you know, let's start a reliever and then.
Yeah. And right. I, you know, for me, look, at the time, I understand I'll do whatever it takes for the team to win. That's who I am. That's the way I've always been.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just at the time, I'm not 100% sure. I wasn't on board 100% at that time, mm-hmm. for coming out of the bullpen in the second inning, as opposed to just starting the game. And you know, there's a rhythm, there's a flow,
mm-hmm.
to the game that the starting pitcher knows and gets into. And I don't know if the World Series is necessarily the time to actually.
When did you find out?
That morning.
Oh, you're so, kidding me!
Yeah.
So you go to bed the that night, the night
yeah.
before, and you're thinking I'm going to come out of the bullpen.
Well, no, it was
up in the air.
It was up in the air. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was up in the air.
But still, like this is part of the you hear. I've never been a starting pitcher in the major leagues.
Yeah.
But I've witnessed starting pitchers in the major leagues of like, okay, my mindset is starting the night before. I'm going to bed. I'm thinking about, you know, this and that and this and that.
Sure.
You're going to bed like, where am I going to pitch?
And we're not talking about, you know, the regular season. We're talking about the World Series.
Yeah.
So. But it is funny because I think that's kind of the part that you have to adjust as you get older. I mean, look, I've been, you know, my wife and I have been all over the place playing, and we've been, you know, through hell and back, and we're here. So really the being affected by pitching or starting or whatever in the World Series is really a very minuscule thing compared to many things that are going on. So I think that's something that, you know, I've been able to adjust and understand that, you know, just be ready to stay ready. Just stay ready. And that's the biggest thing, is that if you have the opportunity and the opportunity comes around and you're ready, mm-hmm. then you're going to perform at your best on that day. At your best. That doesn't mean the numbers are going to be the way you want them to, but mm-hmm. you're going to be able to give your best effort. You're going to be able to give, you know, everything that you have, because you are prepared. And I think that means, you know, that means everything. I mean, because those opportunities come and go.
You know, it's. I think this is sort of a microcosm of starting maybe with a wild card game, let's say Oakland, New York, and how. And I even saw it with the Red Sox, as well as Alex Cora did, as well as the Red Sox did. There was a lot of scripting. There was a lot of scripting of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're talking about, obviously, the original script or one, the really outside the box script, they didn't do, but then they do sort of another form of scripting as the game goes on. This is sort of like, I think, you know, in terms of, okay, Rich, you've mm-hmm. hit your limit, you're bringing in Madsen, whoever. But this is sort of I feel like the way the game is going, but I feel like across the board in the postseason, this was sort of it. Like,
yeah.
It was a lot of that.
Well, I mean, we saw it last year, too, with Houston and the way they used Peacock out of the bullpen. I mean, we, you know, and the way that Boston was able to use Eovaldi. And, obviously, you know, it just proved to be a great solution and a great formula, I believe. I think that when you get into the World Series and the postseason, you can look at numbers, but a lot of that stuff has to go out the window, and you have to go with the guys that, you know, are obviously, you know, being efficient and just going for it. I think that's the biggest thing is going for it.
Madison Bumgarner,
you know, yeah,
right, I mean, a few years ago. Dude, that was
130 pitches or whatever.
I do think that we saw some of that with the Red Sox that they ran out David Price and they said power through a couple different times and because he was rolling and I'm with you. And, I think that maybe we're going to see, maybe we see more extremes for the postseason next year or during the regular season. Maybe we learn from it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think one of the things is that when you look at the, if you want to call it like almost like the Andrew Miller kind of process or the Andrew Miller experiment or whatever you want to call it, like a few years ago with Cleveland, it works in the postseason. But, I just don't know, you know, even with us last year in the postseason, Brandon Morrow, he pitched every single game in the World Series. I think it works definitely in the postseason. There is a model that can be sustained through the postseason, but through an entire season, guys will burn out. I just don't see it.
People fell in love with the Tampa thing. I don't.
I'm not on board on that either. I think, you know, you have starting pitchers and you have relievers and you have guys that are, the whole thing a couple years ago where closers were supposed to come in the eighth inning because it was a more valuable inning.
Right, we were waiting all year for Kimbrel to do it and he barely did it, right?
Yeah. Well, the hardest three outs in the game, as they say, are the last three outs of, in the ninth.
And you've talked to, and that's the thing that drives me nuts because I understand, like, the whole, going back to, all the way back to 2003, the closer by committee when the Red Sox tried it. I understand the important, maybe the most important outs are in the seventh inning. But I've also talked to guys like Billy Wagner. I've talked to these sort of guys who had pitched in the eighth inning when he was with Red Sox, and he closed his whole career. And he said, it's different.
It is different. Yeah, absolutely. Just like starting is different.
Starting the first inning is different, right?
Just like a starter coming in the second or third or fourth. I mean, it's completely different. There's a routine to it. And, you know, to be able to adjust to that and now make that commonplace in baseball is going to take a long time if that's what they want to do. Mm-hmm. Because you've kind of sculpted these players and these guys throughout the entire minor leagues to come up. It's not just something that you can say, oh, wow, we're just going to flip this guy. We're just going to make him we're going to put him in the bullpen. We're going to start a reliever because he only gets to go through the lineup two times as opposed to see their best three hitters twice instead of three times. Well, what if, like for me, for example, my batting average goes down the more times I see hitters. So the third time through the lineup, my batting average against is the lowest out of the entire game as opposed to the first inning or the second inning. It just continues to keep going down. So why is it more valuable to have the pitcher? I mean, I get it. Like, you know, there are guys that get seen. The more they get seen, the easier they are to hit. But what if they decided to, you know, pitchers start actually buying into the concept of the pitchability of understanding how to invent or be creative during the game. And I'm not saying you gotta pull rabbits out of your hat. I'm just saying it has to be, the creativity process has to be able to be allowed to grow.
Why? And so, you know, I have to ask, so obviously, you know, the Dodgers have the biggest analytics department around, and you make the World Series a couple of different times, you're doing something right. But to me, if you gave me those numbers and you say this guy is getting better and better and better, or it gets better the third time through the lineup than the first time through the lineup, I don't do the, well, he's 39 years old, 38 years old, and, well, he's going to wear down because that's what 38, 39 years old do the third time through the lineup.
Yeah.
I look at exactly what you do. I mean, do you think that this could be, I don't know if you sit down with them in spring training and say, hey, we're looking at everything differently. Look at this a little bit differently.
Well, I think it should be. I mean, you got to take into the eye test. There's an eye test that you just can't play the game on paper. It just can't be, okay, well, no, these guys are hitting this against these, you know, or lefties are hitting. You got to look at that day and see how the ball is coming out of that pitcher's hand. And I'm just talking about pitching now. I'm not even talking about hitting.
Right.
Because there have been plenty of times where guys are, you know, 2 for 2 and they get pinch hit because, you know, they're right-handed and a righty comes in. Because they're 2 for 2 off a lefty. You don't think that they can hit the righty. Or, I mean, I just feel that the longer a starting pitcher stays in the game, if we were going to do a graph, the longer the starting pitcher stays in the game, I believe that if he's throwing the ball efficiently, obviously, and consistently well, and you see that, the higher the percentage of winning that game has to go up. It has to go up. Because you have the feel of the game, and you understand that the rhythm and what is going on and how, you know, the umpire strike zone. And to be able to use that in your favor or to your advantage is something that's huge. And I think that, you know, we may be missing that too, or going away from that, because the eye test is something that you can't, it's not on paper, you know, on that day. And you know, we're getting away from it, and it's concerning. I think it is, absolutely, because especially comments like Bill James made that, you know, any player can be replaceable. Sure, anybody can be replaceable, but can any player really be replaceable? You know what I mean? Just any player? Do you think people are going to want to see player A instead of J.D. Martinez or Mookie Betts now?
Right.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, the players, fans come to see the players that, you know, perform on a daily basis at the major league level. That's what they want to see. And they want to see it at the highest level. And the guys that provide that, you can't just replace that.
There has to be... this coming year is going to be really interesting because, you know, I think that maybe we haven't reached a tipping point, and I know that everyone's striving to get more and more information. Everyone's striving, and this even go to the thing with the Red Sox face with the Astros, the sign stealing and all that stuff, right?
Sure,
I mean, that keeps getting to another level as well. I mean, there has to be – somebody has to do something and saying, okay, this is right. And this is, maybe we should rethink this. In other words, with analytics, with shifts and everything else, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? I talked to Zach Scott of the Red Sox, he had of the analytics, and he said one of the things we weren't doing well was disseminating the information. We weren't doing that.
Communicating
the right way. Good for them for understanding that. But it seems like that's the outlier. There's not enough of that.
Sure, I think that a lot of it, and again, it's a give and take. The players have to understand that there is the analytics side of it. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to understand it. And the analytics department has to understand that there's a player's side to it. They don't have to agree with it, but they do have to understand it. So somewhere there has to be a happy medium. Because I just believe that a lot of times with the shifting and with you know, the pinch hits, we're playing for things that are on paper that say that they are absolutes because they're numbers. But the human being is not an absolute. It's not, you know, and when you start messing around with human beings, it's, you know, it hasn't worked out over the course of history. So I'm just saying that I don't think this is something that's going to be, we're still in the very beginning stages of it. It's not perfected, obviously. And I understand the concept that, you know, numbers are supposed to be this, you know, absolute and perfect, you know, idea out there, and we would all like to have an equation that would be able to lead to the outcome at the end of a baseball game. But the fact is that, you know, guys adjust and they adjust their swings during the game. Pitchers become more creative. You know, infielders and outfielders have range and they're able to get to balls. And on certain days, maybe that batter is not, you know, pulling the ball the way that he normally does or hitting it to the opposite field the way that he normally does. So we have to adjust during that game. It can't be based on, you know, just certain statistics that came from, you know, even 5 years of games. I understand, I've looked at the numbers and I've seen them, and I see, you know, the way the shifts line up and where guys consistently percentage-wise hit baseballs. Mm. But there has to be something in-game where it's saying, well, his swing's a little bit slower today, or how do you quantify that during the game? Do you call down and say, hey, look, his swing speed is at 95, mm. not 98 today, so mm. he's going to be hitting the ball the other way more.
Mm-hmm.
And the pitcher's velocity, right? So Rich Hill throws 90 miles an hour, but yet he has one of the highest swing and miss percentages in baseball on his fastball. Okay, well, you know, it doesn't show. It's not 100, so yeah. People don't – we're still not at that point. We're not at the point where you're understanding that the numbers and the velocity and the power and all this is not – it's not an absolute. So I just don't look at it as something that you know, is going to be guaranteed. Does it give you an advantage? Yes. Is it a tool that can be used to give you an advantage to get to you know, a higher percentage of winning on that day? Yes. Yeah. But we're missing something.
Mm. And that's where the communication has to come in.
Yeah, and the communication is vital. And understanding, the player's understanding of it, and having that bridge between the analytics department and the players is huge. And teams are starting to do that. They're implementing, you know, Brian Bannister, for example, yep. to be able to disseminate that to the players and have us understand, well, this is why you should do this. Mm-hmm. And then now you go out there and you start doing it, and as a player you start seeing the results and the effectiveness of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
But until that happens, you can't just use guys and move them around like pawns and not tell them why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, guys got to the point at the major league level, or even to professional baseball for that matter, in the minor leagues, because of their ability and their stubbornness. Mm-hmm. So you're going to deal with a lot of stubborn guys and, mm-hmm. and guys that need, you know, we all need to be explained why things are being done, not just, you know, stand here because I told you to.
last question. Thanks for the time, Rich.
Yeah.
How long you want to play? I mean, like I said, like you in
yeah.
you've thrown the amount of pitches of a 30-year-old. I remember talking sure. to Seth Levinson, your agent.
Yeah.
When you signed with the Dodgers and it was a 3-year deal, he was the guy who turned me on to this. And you look it up and like, oh, you're right. You know, yep. he hasn't thrown a lot of pitches.
Right.
And I don't think that's not just agent speak. That is reality, and we're seeing that right now. How long do you have an idea?
I would like to pitch as long as I can, to be yeah. honest with you. I don't know when that day will be, but I certainly hope that it is something where, you know, we can make that decision as a family, and you know, my wife, my son, and I can leave on our own terms. We all know that this game and a lot of things in life aren't able to leave on your own terms. And I've been able to be fortunate. I've been fortunate enough to be able to play with guys who have, like Jason Veritek, Tim Wakefield, Derek Jeter, and Chase Utley, who have really been able to go out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I would love to do. I've gotten to this point because I've grinded and I've battled for a while and keep fighting and will continue to fight because I don't know any different to stay in this game and continue to play. And I talked to my son actually the other night. My wife and I, Caitlin, I asked him how much longer do you want me to play or whatever. He goes, oh no, you keep playing. As you know, he wants me to keep playing. So
that's cool. How old is he?
He's seven.
Oh,
yeah. So yeah.
I bet he has a little Hill Dodger jersey.
Oh, he's got the yeah. He got to throw out the first pitch this year.
Oh, he did.
It was really
oh.
cool. So
he's like, Dad, I want yeah. you to play for another 20 years.
I know. Yeah.
Hey, Rich, thanks so much.
Rob,
I really
thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Rob. Thank you.